Chapter 17, Israel Hands. Israel Hands had a great bleeding wound in his thigh. We bound it up with a soft silk handkerchief of my mother's that I fetched from my own sea chest. After the bandage and some food, Hands sat up straighter and spoke louder. He gave clear advice for controlling the ship, and I was delighted with my new position of captain. Then, as we approached the North Inlet, Hands suddenly called to me,
"Could you get me a bottle of wine? I think it would be good for my blood and not spin my head like brandy does."
Though his request was politely phrased, I felt an edge of trickery to it.
"Of course," I said.
Though it may take me some time to find an unbroken bottle, I tromped noisily down the stairs into the hold, then ran lightly along the galley and climbed back up the forecastle ladder. I saw Hands had risen to hands and knees and now crawled across the deck. He reached a thick coil of rope and pulled out a long knife hidden in the coils. He quickly hid it in his jacket and crawled back to his place. I shuddered at the realization that Hands intended to kill me. I was certain he wouldn't try the attack before we were safely beached. He was still in no shape to sail. I slipped below again and came up with a bottle of wine, which I gave him.
"We're not long for land now, Captain Hawkins," he said agreeably. "Look, there's a spot to beach a ship in. Fine flat sand."
So he issued commands, which I quickly obeyed. As we moved ever closer to ground, I stood craning my head to watch the ripples spreading wide before the bows. Suddenly, fear crept over me, and I turned sharply to see Hands already halfway toward me with the knife in his hand. I drew my pistol and pointed it at him. He paused, and I stood frozen. Could I shoot him? He smiled then. I suspect he knew I had never shot anyone in my life. He drew back and tossed his knife at me. But the ship struck land and lurched hard just as Hands threw. I felt a blow and a sharp pang. I was pinned by the shoulder to the mast. But the shock had jerked through my arms and my pistol had fired. Hands cried out as the pistol shot struck him. He tumbled over the side, hitting the water head first. I tugged loose the knife that pinned me to the mast and saw that it had merely passed through the thick pinch of skin in my arm. Still, the smell of my own blood made my senses whirl. I crawled across the crooked deck and went below. I roughly bandaged my arm and then stumbled back on deck to strike the sails. Now the Española must trust to luck, like myself. I scrambled overboard where the ship leaned toward the soft sand. As I headed through the woods, back toward the stockade, I began to worry about my reception. I doubted Captain Smollett would be happy about my slipping away again, but I hoped the end result would bring about my forgiveness. The night grew blacker, but the faint glow of the moon helped me find my way. The stockade lay quiet, though a fire still burned outside unattended. The fire was bigger than we usually built, as we weren't prone to being so wasteful with wood. I hoped this wasn't a sign that the captain was worse and no longer cared about such small things. I climbed the fence easily and crept toward the log house. As I walked, I heard snoring and my spirits lifted. Still, I was troubled that no one had seen my approach. Such a bad watch was not the captain's way. I slipped into the house, and suddenly a shrill voice broke forth out of the darkness.
"Pieces of eight! Pieces of eight!"
I recognized Silver's parrot at once.
Men woke up around me, scrambling to their feet.
"Who goes?"
a rough voice demanded. I turned to run, but slammed into a man standing between me and the door. The man grabbed my arm tightly and called for a light. I recognized the voice as Long John Silver.